Who was Marilyn Monroe, and who is she in our collective consciousness? A movie star icon who had a tragic life, the first proper sex symbol, the girl in the white halter neck dress who showed her knickers standing over a vent on the subway in New York City. She may be a poster you own, or a keyring, or on a mug. She's a 50s siren with bleach blonde hair and red lipstick. We all carry our own vision of Marilyn. But on Radio Gorgeous today, we're exploring the sensitive, clever, sometimes unconfident Marilyn. We're talking about a book, The Girl, Marilyn Monroe, The Seven-Year Itch, and the Birth of an Unlikely Feminist, written by British author Michelle Morgan, who's a massive fan of Marilyn's. This is her fifth book about Marilyn. She's written about many other, she's written many other books too, and she's an expert on Hollywood. Hi, welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Hello, nice to be here.
So I must first say to you, The Birth of an Unlikely Feminist. Can you tell us about that?
Well, the idea behind that is that in the 1950s, she wasn't considered a feminist, and she likely wouldn't have considered herself a feminist. But in today's terms, in terms of her trailblazing attitude, starting her own business, that kind of thing, sort of sticking up for herself, sticking up for herself in front of businessmen in studios in Hollywood, then she was most certainly a feminist in our today's terms, possibly not in the 50s, but certainly today. And so that's why we called it an unlikely feminist.
Yeah, because she actually kind of changed the system, didn't she? She slightly brought them down, the Hollywood system.
She did, because they wouldn't really let her have the sort of parts that she wanted. So she walked out on her contract and she started her own film company, and then when she went back to 20th Century Fox, it was under this fantastic new contract that was, you know, gave her a lot of rights that most people had never even dreamt about. So she really sort of contributed to the breakdown of the studio system, because she fought them and she wasn't going to give up. I think at one point she would have rather just walked away from her whole Hollywood career than to give up and go back to 20th Century Fox. She just would never have done it.
Well, that's kind of the crux of the book, because it is about Marilyn finding her true self, I'd say, because she found that the more she kind of, apparently, well, we find out in the book that she was a very bookish person and an intellectual, and she really, really loved reading, and she was very studious, and obviously that site had never come out in roles, had it?
No, that's right. And I mean, she was a big fan of people like Shakespeare and James Joyce. She was always in bookshops, and the bookshop managers would say that if Marilyn was in their store, she wouldn't be looking at the cheap paperbacks at the front. She'd be in the back looking at the big poetry books and the big heavy dramas. She was very, very into books, and she was a very bookish person. And she her first charge card was for a bookshop. She absolutely loved studying and loved reading. She always had a book in her hand, always carried a book with her. And in fact, somebody told me when she was in London making The Prince and the Showgirl, he accompanied her around town, and he said that if she went into Foyles, it was a disaster, because there was no way she was coming back out again. She would be in there for hours. So she absolutely loved books and she loved reading.
Fabulous. So why was Marilyn so desperate to be taken seriously? Can you put it into context for people?
Well, I think it was because she was a serious person in real life, and she wasn't dumb. She was intelligent. And at first she had accepted these dumb blonde roles because she thought that it would lead somewhere else, that she was grateful to have a job in the first place. And she thought that she could prove herself once she had got a job. But that really didn't happen, which is why she took a stand. But she was very anxious to be taken seriously, because that's the way she was in real life. I mean, don't get me wrong, she had a great sense of humour, and she was a funny person. She could be very funny and caring and everything else. But she did have this serious side, and she wanted people to see that. She didn't want people to think she was a dumb blonde, because that couldn't have been further from the truth.
So do you think her serious side came from her upbringing, from her tragic childhood?
I think possibly. Because she didn't finish high school, because she was basically sort of harangued into marrying this boy next door, so she had to finish high school in order to do that. I think she always carried with her that she needed to have more education and to learn all the time because of this, that she didn't finish high school. So she, you know, she went to loads of acting classes for her whole life. She went to acting classes. She even went to a college course at UCLA. So yes, I think that possibly her childhood did have a lot to do with it, because she always, I guess, wondered what would have happened if she had been able to finish high school.
Yeah, I mean, she felt lacking. It's very Gemini, isn't it? She's a Gemini personality. So she's got one side, which is this bubbly extrovert fun, and then she's got the doubting kind of deep side.
That's right. Yeah, that's a brilliant way of describing it, yeah.
Now, what was Marilyn Monroe's effect on women in the 50s?
Well, there was two different types of women. There was women who loved Marilyn, generally younger women who looked up to her, wanted to be her. They would enter loads of competitions, you know, lookalike competitions and everything else. And then there was the other kind of women who thought that she was a bad influence on their daughters or their husbands, and they wanted her to cover up. So there was two very distinct lines. There was certainly a lot of women who would complain about her to the film studio and say that she'd gone, you know, too far in the costumes that she wore and everything. But for teenagers, they absolutely loved her. And I spoke to a lovely lady. She's one of my friends, called Maureen. And she was a Marilyn fan when she was a teenager, and she just adored her. And she told me that whereas everyone else had pictures of Elvis on their wall or in their desks, she had Marilyn because she felt completely inspired by her. But at the same time, I also spoke to people who told me that their parents greatly disliked Marilyn because of, they thought she was a bad influence. So, you know, it was either one or the other. I think maybe it was more that the younger people seemed to appreciate her more, and they recognised something of her in themselves that perhaps the older generation couldn't quite see.
Now, was her sexuality cultivated, or was she a sexy person anyway?
Well, in all the pictures that I've ever seen of her since she was a teenager, I mean, there was always something about her. She had, you know, whatever it is, she had it. When she was Norma Jean, which was obviously her, you know, her true name, her true persona, I wouldn't have described her as sexy. She was very, very pretty, very, very cute. She had long brown hair, curly brown hair, and she didn't wear revealing clothes. I think it was very much once she signed up to 20th Century Fox, she got a little bit sexier. But before that, she'd been modeling, and she was wearing bikinis and everything else. So I think she always knew from being a teenager, she knew that she was pretty and that she had something about her. But it wasn't until she got a little bit older, sort of maybe 19, 20, that she really started to become a kind of a sexy person, and that went on as she got older.
Did she use her sexuality as power, like someone like Madonna has done?
I think probably that she would say that she did, because she knew that she had a power over people because of the way that she looked and because of her personality. She could do a lot of stuff because she was glamorous. It's the same with everybody. I think glamour even now gives people power, but ultimately she knew that it would be knowledge that would give her the most power. So that's why she continued to study so hard and, you know, really learn about everything that she could to learn about, because it was that kind of power that she was more interested in.
Now, let's look at her relationships. When the book starts, she's with Joe Madagio, who was a very famous baseball star, quite a lot older than her. She kind of liked men that were older than her, looking for a father figure. But the relationship was floundering. Why? Was he not bright enough for her, do you think?
No, I think that she really loved Joe DiMaggio, and he really loved her. It was a question of quite bad timing, I think, because when they first met, it was 1952, and her star was pretty much exploding. And by the time it was 1954 and they decided to get married, he was coming out of a baseball career. He wanted somebody who would settle down, become a mother, you know, make pasta at home, all this kind of thing. And while she kind of liked the idea of that, it wasn't really who she was at that time. And she loved her, you know, her career. She loved her career plans, and she desperately wanted to carry on being an actress. And he really didn't give her the support as a husband that she would have wanted to. I say this in the book. In fairness, I think he was pretty much a normal 1950s husband, in that he wanted his wife at home with him by his side, supporting him. But Marilyn wasn't a typical 1950s wife, so the two clashed at that point. And I think they were definitely very, very good friends, and Joe DiMaggio came back towards her later life and was a hugely wonderful friend to her. But at that time, the timing was all wrong, and I think they just didn't understand each other. She didn't understand what he wanted from her. He didn't understand what she wanted from him, and you know, they just had to go their separate ways.
Very sad. Now, you call the book has got the 7-year itch in the title. Can you tell us why this film's relevant?
The film's relevant because this was what she was making at the time when she decided to walk out of her Hollywood film career. It was the 7-year itch that she was making. It was that film that created the iconic white dress over the subway grating. It was that film that gave her the power, because it was such a big success. It gave her the power to be able to walk away and to know that no matter what happened, the film studio was still going to be inundated with a huge amount of fan mail. So that film was really sort of pivotal to her whole career, really. I mean, now, you know, you see a white dress, you automatically think about Marilyn. If you see a Marilyn lookalike, then 9 times out of 10 they'll be wearing the white dress, because that film was the film that really cemented her stardom. That was the one that everybody thinks about, and so it was a huge time in her life, and it was a catalyst for where she needed to go afterwards.
Okay, so she was born in California, she lived in Hollywood, and then she was very attracted to the East Coast. The East Coast is sort of where kind of more intellectuals live. It's not as flashy and glamorous. I mean, it's basically not Hollywood. And it's kind of where old money is and people with kind of different values than Hollywood. But she was attracted over there because of the famous school of drama in New York. Can you tell us about Lee Strasberg?
Yes, he ran the Actors Studio, and he was assisted by his wife Paula. And Marilyn obviously knew about the studio, and people like Marlon Brando was going there, and he was a friend of Marilyn's, so he would have probably spoken to her about that. So she was very attracted to it because there was a lot of very serious New York actors that went there, and she too obviously wanted to become a serious actress, and she thought that they would really be able to help her. So she decided to go there. First of all, she was a spectator. She used to take private lessons with Lee Strasberg in his living room. They also did little groups as well in his apartment. And then finally she had enough confidence to be able to do a scene at the actual actor studio. So she
that went down very well, even though the actors there were skeptical of Marilyn, weren't they?
They were, because they resented the Hollywood people coming into their studio at first, and they thought the same way about Marilyn. And they, of course, they had watched her films, and they associated her with these frothy roles, and so they had no idea what her true talent was. But then as soon as she got on stage and did this scene, they were blown away. And that scene actually went down in history for many, many years. And people would talk about it. And, you know, if you watch a documentary about the Actors Studio, then almost always it will mention Marilyn, because she really took them by surprise. And I think she maybe even took herself by surprise as well. She always wanted to be this fantastic actress, and having the New York actors say that she was good, you know, cemented her hopes and dreams of becoming a dramatic theatrical actress.
Which sadly she didn't get a chance to do much, because her life, as we know, was Short, died at 36, the same age as Princess Diana. So what happened was is that she then met Arthur Miller, who was very different than Joe Madagio in the way that he... Well, the only similarity was that he was older. But he was a playwright, he was intelligent, all his friends were sort of... I keep saying the word intellectual, but they were people that took themselves sort of seriously. Tell us about that.
Yes, well, she had met Arthur in the early 1950s on the film studio in Hollywood, and they were both attracted to each other, but he was married at the time, and nothing really happened between them. He went back to the East Coast, but they kept in contact. And then when she moved to New York, they got back in contact with each other again and started going out. By that time, his marriage was all but over. He was still living in the family home, but he... you know, he always said that the marriage was very fractured and they were parting. So Marilyn and him started seeing each other secretly at first because, you know, obviously because of their circumstances. But she was very attracted to him because he was intellectual, because he was serious, because he took her seriously as well. He was very supportive of her career. He knew what it was like to have a career in that business, you know. I mean, he was a playwright, which meant he was around actors all the time and he was in theatres all the time, and on movie sets sometimes too. So he knew everything and he was very supportive. He wanted her to go on and have a very good career. He didn't want her to stop her career and become a housewife. So she really appreciated that. And for quite a while, that marriage worked. And, you know, Arthur sometimes gets a bad rap with Marilyn fans. But personally, I think that that marriage did work at first. And they both were very happy together. And, you know, they wanted children. She very sadly miscarried a few times during that marriage, but she was very determined to be this wonderful wife to him and to support him in the way that he was supporting her. But unfortunately, ultimately, it broke down.
Yeah, why?
So, you know, but certainly at first, I think she was crazy in love with him.
Why did it break down and how long were they together?
They were married for 4 years. There's many stories about why it broke down. I think the truth of the matter is that, you know, they'd gotten to a point where they could no longer really talk to each other. It was a very big divide. The fact that she couldn't give birth, but he'd had children with another person, maybe that contributed. Also, he wrote The Misfits, which Marilyn starred in as well.
Yeah, her last film,
Yeah, and she took that really to be a bit of an insult to her because there was a lot of things that she had said to him which ultimately went into the script.
Oh, wow, so that, I must watch it. I'd love to see, you know, I must watch it knowing that. It'd be really interesting.
It's a great film, actually. I mean, it's quite depressing at times and very dark, but it is. She's a brilliant actress in it. And also on the set of Let's Make Love, by that time... the marriage was kind of breaking down and she had an affair with her co-star Yves Montand. So it was just a combination of many different factors. And in the end, by the time that The Misfits had finished, they couldn't be in the same room as each other. And so they separated, which was, you know, it's quite sad.
I think looking at your book, what I got from it, but the collapse of the marriage to Arthur was the beginning of a downhill struggle really for her with her mental health. And depression and insomnia. I think probably not being able to have the children, another failed marriage, it sort of got on top of her.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would get on top of anybody, quite frankly. I think that the fact that she couldn't have children was very, very deeply depressing for Marilyn. She'd wanted children. She desperately wanted them with Arthur. She even went through operations to try and, you know, get a better chance of giving birth, of carrying a child to term. And I think had she had children, I don't know if it would have saved her, but it certainly, I think, would have made her happier in those years. It was just, you know, it was very, very sad that she wanted to be this really amazing housewife and actress at the same time. And I think when that marriage ended, she maybe asked herself questions about, you know, what had happened in the past 4 years. And I think it was quite a confusing time. And I think probably, you know, from then on, which was the end of 1960, they divorced until her death.
In 62, just to let people know. Yeah.
Yeah. She did certainly seem to have a lot more personal problems in her life during that time than before.
Well, really sadly, for someone that was so brilliant, which is quite often the case with an artist, is that they have a crisis of confidence. And she, you know, confidence was her real problem, really, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. She would be the first to admit that she didn't have confidence and that she was always nervous before a scene in class or before she went on set. And Lee Strasberg said to her, you know, the moment that you're not nervous, give up, because, you know, it means that you don't care. So she sort of took strength with that. But when you read her notebooks and the things that she'd written, she did have this sort of inferiority complex where she wondered if she was good enough and she wondered if she really could do it. And I wish that she'd had more belief in herself, but at the same time it was probably as a result of her childhood that she didn't have much confidence in herself, because she didn't have the perfect childhood and she was kind of shuttled from one place to another. And I don't think that gave her the best start in life where confidence is concerned and where self-belief is concerned.
And also, the thing that we love about Marilyn is her vulnerability. And maybe if she'd had this kind of good childhood, she wouldn't have had that edge. That, because we all love her because we want to mother her.
That's true. I mean, I've loved her since I was 15. In 1985, I discovered her, and I always sort of saw her as, somebody that I could have saved, you know, had I known her. And ever since I've been a fan, I've met many, many people who say, oh, you know, if only I could have been there, I would have saved her. I think we all feel as though we could have helped in some way, because she was so vulnerable. But also, I think we see a bit of ourselves in her too, that, you know, there's been times when I felt vulnerable. And like when I first got to become a Marilyn fan, I was 15, and you know what it's like when you're 15, you don't particularly feel great about yourself. And so I sort of saw that in Marilyn, and I saw that, well, you know, if she can fulfill her dreams, then I can fulfill mine. And you know, so we all sort of see different things in her, but certainly we do look at her. I mean, I don't know, well, there's nobody in my family or in my immediate circle that doesn't look at Marilyn in, you know, in a very sympathetic and caring way. I don't know anybody who doesn't look at her as if, you know, that they would like to be her friend and they would like to have helped her in some way.
Exactly. And The 7-Year Itch and The Birth of an Unlikely Feminist, written by author Michelle Morgan, is published by runningpress.com. Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And for more glamorous and powerful women, never miss a podcast. Sign up at radiogorgeous.com.